Last week in this church at the 11 a.m. Mass on Sunday, Bishop Daly welcomed over 20 young men as students at Bishop White Seminary. Bishop Daly blessed them, encouraged them through his preaching, told them to preach the gospel whether people like to hear it or not. He didn't use those words, those are my words. And he asked all of us to pray for them and to pray also for their families as they entered the narrow gate to do God's will. I'd like to speak a little bit about vocations this morning to continue that theme, and I'd like to talk about, in particular, religious vocations and vocations to the priesthood. And I know fully well that marriage is also a vocation, and so is single life, but I only have about 8 minutes. And I wanted to continue the idea that Bishop Daly introduced last week. I want to talk about the decisions to abandon certain parts of our culture that these young men and young women who enter religious communities today have to face. But first, let's have a few statistics. I'm always good at that. I could make numbers say anything I want them to. So there was a time in the middle 19th century, the middle 1800s, when the Bishop of Montreal founded the Holy Names Sisters. Mother Mary Rose, if you remember her name, was the foundress of the community. And over the course of a few years, the sisters grew sufficiently in number that they were able to come to the Pacific Northwest. Later in the 1800s, they got off the boat, so to speak, at Fort Vancouver, across the river from Portland, and began to make their way up the inland road to Seattle and up the river to Spokane. In 1965, which was a good year because that's the year I graduated from high school, in 1965, the sisters in Oregon and Washington numbered about 750, almost all of them teaching in our grade schools, in two high schools, and two colleges, primarily colleges for teacher education. In 1965, the sisters divided their jurisdictions between Washington and Oregon, and Mother Kathleen Clare from Spokane was the superior for the Washington province of the sisters, numbering the greater portion of half of the 750, about 400 sisters or so were in her jurisdiction. Today there are about five that are still working, and that's from 50 years from 1965, we went from about 400, 450 down to five. There are others, but they have gone into nursing homes or are really disabled, and they are very, very good sisters, but there are not a lot of them around anymore. Both the deacon and I grew up in the old St. Aloysius Parish area, over by Mission Park to Division Street, from Boone Avenue, say, up to Montgomery Avenue. And that year, 1965, somebody took account of the priests that had been ordained out of St. Aloysius Parish. Well, there were over 100 between the 8 years of about 1930 and 1965. Since 1965, I think that I will count myself and Father Bob McNeese, and I will add Father Tom LaManna to that, who was probably really from St. Francis Xavier Parish, but just to be fair, we'll add him to that. And I don't know of any others. In 1968, 3 years after 1965, the Jesuits had 260-plus men in Spokane City, some in studies, some teaching, most working to spread the gospel. And today, I think that number is down to be less than 20. Now, how did that happen? Well, some people point to a lower birth rate, which I say is the cultural result of rampant contraception. How about this? I have a right to fill in the blank, whatever I like to do, over your right to fill in the blank. We have the era of individual rights that took over during that time. And then, of course, we have the rise of the individual good over the common good. During World War II and the Korean conflict, we still respected the idea of common good, that what mattered was the survival of political freedom throughout the world, economic freedom, freedom from tyranny, and most countries put forth armies and navies to support those rights. But since that time, since about 1960, the rise of the individual good has taken over. Then now a person says, well, what's in it for me? What am I going to get out of this? Rather than what are we going to benefit? And I want to propose that those are three symptoms of the cultural shift that has happened in our society. Most of us know Father Robert Spitzer, the former president of Gonzaga University. This is a field that's interested him for some time. A number of years ago, he wrote a book called Healing the Culture. And in this work, Father Spitzer recommends that we need to recognize that our culture has shifted. It has shifted from a contributing culture to a distributive culture. That rather, echoing the words of John Kennedy, what can I do for my country? We say now, what can my country do for me? What will be distributed out of our economy and our society toward me, not what I would put in to it. So, where do we go from here? I think the first thing we need to recognize is that passing through that narrow gate takes courage, it takes decision, and it takes the desire to do God's will. God's will as God mediates it through his church, not as it is mediated through the culture. Do you remember your old catechism? Remember all the titles we had for grace? We had sanctifying grace, actual grace, sacramental grace. All of those were descriptors were used to describe how God enters into our life as human persons. And I want to suggest that we need to follow the promptings of God and use the actual grace that he gives us. That is, the grace to influence our actions to a little higher degree than we are now doing. I want to propose that parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles step forward and encourage younger people to live lives of generosity, to live lives of giving rather than taking, of sharing rather than amassing. I want to ask these same people to encourage the young people that they could influence to enter into a real and definitive study of history. Not simply a recitation of wars and battles and kingdoms and dates. Was it 1840 or 1480, you know, that type of thing. We all remember the horror of that in school. I'm not asking for that. I'm asking that we encourage our young people to study how Jesus Christ brought salvation into the world and how that has affected people's lives over the centuries. To understand the history that really matters, not the acquisition of real estate, but rather the distribution of God's grace and goodness. The book of Psalms speaks of the great works of God. By encouraging our young people to consider the great works of God in the world in which they live, they can encounter the goodness of God, and in their zeal, they can resolve to do God's will. They can enter the narrow gate, either the narrow gate of priesthood or religious life, the narrow gate of marriage, or perhaps even the more narrow gate of leading a single life, but they do so, in the words of St. Ignatius, to give greater glory to God. And finally, I think that it's important that we support our young people as they make a response to God, be it through the studies required for ordination, learning to lead religious life through the gospel councils, or responding to God by giving of oneself to the other in holy matrimony. And I think if we can start a rebuilding with those who are a little younger than the rest of us, and most of us maybe, we can stand some hope in switching the course of history in which we find ourselves. And finally, as a last thought, I just want to comment that the Lord has promised, the Lord who died on the cross and rose from the dead, and that we are confident that the gate will remain open to those who so live their lives as to enter the narrow gate of doing God's will.